You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, but before we get started, I wanted to tell you about an exciting opportunity for you and the leaders you know this fall, the Pipeline Conference. Our team, the Lifeway Leadership Team, is hosting Pipeline on October 13 in Nashville. And it's a conference unlike others you've probably been to because it's a training conference, an event that will show you and your church leadership team how to launch a leadership pipeline. You'll hear from speakers such as Tom Rayner, Eric Geiger, Kerry Newhoff, and Paul Tripp. We'll have plenary sessions interspersed with shorter, practical TED-style talks. We'll have Q&As with the speakers to clarify and apply what was said, and we'll also offer a second day built around coaching and implementation that will have limited seating. And we really want you to join us. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more and to register. Pricing is affordable, and we're offering an early bird discount through the end of July, so you want to move quickly. Again, go to myleadershippipeline.com for more information and to register. We look forward to seeing you there. Enjoy the podcast. Hey, and welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins.
What?
Today,
that was short.
That was, yeah, you kept it short, which is good because we got to get to our guest.
It is Monday.
Yes. Well, our listeners don't know when we record this.
For all they know,
it's 4 months ago. But we have the honor of a guest with us today, which is why Todd is keeping it short. We have John Acuff on with us today. Is a name you probably are familiar with through
social media.
Social media, so Instagram, Twitter. He's all over those. He speaks. He blogs. In fact, he started blogging on a site called, I think he started the site Stuff Christians Like, which has been a long time ago, but that was hilarious.
Oh, thanks.
I loved it. I still love it. I have the book. Speaking of books, John has written several others.
I just want to put a snark, sarcasm, wit. Maybe there may be some winsome, but you have to know that's got to be this podcast. It's got to be this.
It's like a trigger warning for people.
If there's a stuff thing. Christians like, we're gonna laugh. We're sorry.
I'm just saying.
I want to go ahead and let you know.
We're known as like
jokes
Statler
are okay.
And Waldorf. We just kind of sit in the back and go say things to try to make each other one up each other and
sure,
make each other
sure.
laugh harder until it becomes so inappropriate that we question our own Christianity and then
we repent and do it again.
Yeah, and then you repeat. Yeah.
Wash, rinse, repeat.
The prodigal son probably left more than once. I mean, let's be honest. Have you ever only done one sin and then been like, that was good to get out of the way?
Yep.
Like, that dude left 1,000 times.
He probably did.
It just took him a while to ask Dad for all the money.
Exactly.
All right, so John's most recent book is Do Over, Rescue Monday, Reinvent Your Work, and Never Get Stuck. That one came out a few months ago. It looks at how everybody has the 4 things we probably need to succeed in work in terms of relationships, character, skills, and hustle. And how to basically take those and go into new roles, or when you're stuck in a work and have hit a ceiling, or if you get bumped out of a job and you're without, and then sometimes just an awesome new opportunity that requires more out of you. So how do you essentially start again, start over? How do you get into those and succeed using those? I'm sure some of those themes will come out as we ask our leadership questions. John's other books, going back, he has one called Start, Punch Fear in the Face. I'm all for punching in the face.
You should have said that differently. I mean, you're a great radio host, but you should have got Punch Fear in the Face or given
like,
some.
Morning dog version?
Yeah, the shock.
I'm in the zoo.
We're going to punch fear in the face.
Sunday. Carson Fairgrounds.
And then he's got Quitter, Closing the Gap Between Your Day Job and Your Dream Job, and then Stuff Christians Like, which was, I think, was that your first book?
That was my first, yeah.
And again, that one was, it's a very different book than his others, but highly amusing, looking at essentially sort of the cultural quirks of evangelical Christians.
Of which there are many.
Yes,
well,
and which is one
of
my,
don't really know it.
One of my favorite things.
I always say if you're a leader and your team can't do a good impression of you, you're probably not a good leader.
Oh, yeah, or if they're
afraid to.
If they can't do a good impression of you in front of you.
Yes.
That's
like
true.
That's because they can do a good impression of you. You just don't know
you
it.
Just don't know
that's
it.
Right.
And so if you think right now and you're listening, you're like, they don't do that. Yeah, they do. And they do stuff they don't invite you to. Welcome to leadership.
So you can find out more about John at johnacuff.me.
Actually, acuff.me.
Acuff.me.
People don't have time to be typing.
Oh, 3 extra letters is too much for busy people. Acuff.me.
Yeah, Snapchat.
You know, I just assumed it was johnacuff.me, but
no.
This way you can say acuff me.
Acuff me.
Exactly. Right. It's like a verb.
You can verbify anything.
All right. I'm gonna launch into our first question because I'm really intrigued by it.
Let's do it.
Okay.
That is, who are you learning from right now?
Who am I learning from right now? I learn a lot from my wife. My wife is really, really smart. She has an undergrad in photojournalism and then got a master's in construction management from Georgia Tech, which is a male-dominated industry. And she built homes in Boston. And so
that's an interesting juxtaposition, too. It's like the creative and the structural kind
of. She's super smart. And so I learn a lot.
Is that oxymoronical? I've read your feed this morning.
Yeah, it wasn't. I was writing, and I felt like I had a good use for that word oxymoronical, and Microsoft Word was like, yeah, no. Have you ever misspelled a word so poorly, like Word can't even suggest the right word? Like,
I do it daily on my phone. It's like, you get 2 out of 8 letters correct, and they just give up.
They go, no. So I'm learning from her a lot. I learn a lot from Reggie Joyner, a friend of mine in Atlanta. He's been a mentor over the years. My father-in-law, my dad and I are actually doing our first leadership talk together in the fall at Gordon Conwell. And so he'll call me up and say, hey, have you read Clive Davis's autobiography? It's a sneaky, brilliant leadership book. And so he's constantly recommending stuff. Who else do I learn from? There's guys like in my neighborhood, like Rob Sintel, who I'm in a small group with, and we're playing ping pong today, and we'll get to hang out. And so I try to surround myself.
You schedule ping pong?
Totally. Yeah.
It's like a play date for grownups.
Well, yeah. But otherwise, it doesn't just casual. Nothing casual happens when
that's
you're an
adult. And the busier you get, the less casual anything happens.
And so he texted me this morning and was like, let's do it. And so I was like, 4:30. And so we're going to play. And so I'm trying to surround myself. I was talking to somebody about this the other day, with people who have the kind of lives I want to live. Not just from like a success perspective. Somebody on a podcast asked me, what's success to you? And I said, being known. And they thought I meant being well known, but there's a huge difference between being well known and being known.
Well, and being known and known of.
Yeah. And so like for me, having guys in my life that can challenge me and ask questions has been really fun. Not always easy, but fun.
Well, if you're known, if you're well known and not known, you're in a dangerous place.
Yeah, it's
a pretty precarious platform.
It's toxic, and I don't know how many Christian leaders we need to have blow up before we go, what if we did it differently? What if we didn't have celebrity be the drug we thought was okay? I don't know. It's not easy.
I wonder if the people who fall into that, I genuinely think they fall into it. They just, I don't think they realize it's their drug.
No, for me, but it starts because there's nobility there. It's like, look at what I'm doing for God.
Yes.
And you can coat, you can't coat adultery in that. With building a platform and I don't know. And then you start to isolate. And then the thing you've tweeted a couple times for me, which has been awesome, is leaders who can't be questioned end up doing questionable things. And you get this circle.
That's in my regular rotation.
Yeah, it's great, dude. It's so helpful to me. It's really kind. But I had a friend who, a pastor, somebody in the church stole some money. And so then he circled the wagons really, really tightly. And so nobody, his inner circle is now one other person. And that other person worked for him.
And just to be clear, one person can't make a circle.
No.
That's not how it works.
No, and so, so there's a million ways you get into it, but that always fascinates me.
I feel like the nature of temptation and sin is that, it's like any predator. It always looks for the isolated prey. Yeah. So if you are in a pack, you're a lot safer than if you're isolated, because if you're isolated, then the temptation will just run you over.
And it's if you're in a good pack, because I've seen leaders that have 10 people around them, but my dad said to me one day, he said, surround yourself with people whose livelihood doesn't depend on you. Because people who are getting paid because of my paycheck can't give me honest advice. No offense, it's impossible, because they're going to go, got 3 kids, I got a mortgage. Which of this advice can I give without losing the job I have? It's a really hard situation.
Let's hit our second question. I think you highlighted something when we were talking just beforehand, and maybe that'll come up now. But the question is, what is the main point of emphasis for your leadership right now, either for a team that you're working with or just for yourself in terms of self-leadership? What's that main point of emphasis?
It's hard to think of just one that's a main point. But for me, I'm really big in empathy. Mm-hmm. And I define empathy as understanding what someone needs and acting on it. There's a lot of great leadership teams that do one or the other.
Yeah.
So they understand what you need, but they don't actually do anything about it. Or they act and act and act and act and build things and launch things that nobody really wanted. And so the tension is to have both of those. And so I'm learning that. But I've never led an organization until I started my own company. And so I feel like I'm learning the baby steps of clarity, of just when I think I've been as clear as I can in some instructions, I need to go 10% clearer because it'll be interpreted.
And then as far as that's concerned, once your immediate team is clear, those that you are serving, still, it's not clear to them.
Yeah.
That they are sick of hearing me say one-liners that they are sick of hearing me say.
We play Todd one-liner bingo.
Or whatever it is. Analogy, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, no, you have to understand that's, you know, we're two parts removed from that.
Yeah.
We talk a lot on our team. It comes up regularly because, you know, we are trying to work with churches on leadership development. So we're neck deep in this on a day-to-day basis. And a lot of churches are just scratching the surface. You know, this is something they're interested in but not deep in. And so we come back to the idea of the curse of knowledge, which I encountered in the book Made to Stick, Chip and Dan Heath's book, which is, I don't know if you've read it, but it's phenomenal on communication. The idea that you forget all the things that you didn't used to know. You know, you're an expert now, but you weren't, but you forget what it was like not to be an expert, so you just speak at the expert level, and people are just kind of shaking their head going, I have no idea what you're talking about. No idea where you're going with this. And we struggle with that in communicating to people, but sometimes even in the team where one of us comes into a meeting and the others are 3 days ahead of us on a project and we're going, I don't know what's going on here. It's like clarity is a big deal. In terms of emphases, you did mention the 30 days of hustle challenge. And that's a different emphasis than something like empathy, because it's not so much a value as an actual project you're working on.
Yeah, empathy is more of a soft skill. But for me, I've realized that a lot of times when people set goals, you know, 92% of New Year's resolutions fail. And so if the trick was to do smart goals and obsess about that, we'd all be crushing it. And so you look at it and go, why do only 8% succeed? And so I started this thing, the 30 Days of Hustle, where it's really community-based. And it's crazy what can happen inside a community. And the community is just a private Facebook group. Mm-hmm. But what happens is that it's like the internet before the jerk showed up, like that glorious 25 minutes when the internet first started.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was brief. It was brief.
And you said Facebook as well. I can't believe those two things are in the same sentence.
Yeah. But so it's been really fun. But essentially, it's a 30-day course where I challenge people to actually take all these things they've talked about forever or they've tried 15 times and not worked on. It's a 30-day video course where I kind of walk through step by step of here's why it's not working, here's how it should work, and then you're inside of a community where other people are challenging you and saying, okay, hey, here's how you could try it, or here's what I'd encourage you to do. I mean, for me, a big part of leadership is understanding, and it's so cliche, but like there's a reason it's a cliche. It's because it's true. Like understanding what you can do and what you can't do. Like the more I admit my limits, the more I get to experience a limitless God. And that I get to really step into fun leadership. But leaders hate saying I don't know. They hate saying I'm sorry. They hate saying, you know, I can't figure that out. And so for me, having a community of people around me that fits my strengths and challenges my weaknesses is really fun. And to do that in a setting like the internet is special.
Well, and those are myths, and they're set up by the way that leadership was run, which was more of a command base or a tell. I mean, there's different levels of leadership, right? There's command, tell, teach, model, coach, and mentor, I think are the – I remember that's in the back of Noel Teachy, Leadership Engine. Like how much time each one takes –
oh, yeah.
Increases, but the results also are just...
Command is a lot faster than mentor and coach and model, but it doesn't stick.
No. Yeah. And I mean, and if you want an example of this, be a parent for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You have two daughters, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, 12. I mean, the command model will get them to clean their room, but it will not create in them any sort of interest in being a orderly person.
Yeah.
So that comes from modeling, coaching, and various other sort of invested types of things.
Talk about 30 Days of Hustle a little bit more. Is that a connection with it's both community and discipline, right?
Yes, community is discipline, but discipline tied to this is how you think it should go. Like when we hear the word discipline, where we hear the word efficiency, we sometimes try to become somebody we're not. So an example for me, I've purchased multiple exercise DVD programs where it's like you work out alone in your room, like, and I'm going to do it. And I've done 6 days of the program over the last 3 years. So at this point, when my kids get married, I'll be just ripped. Like, but then a friend of mine invited me to an hour long circuit training program, and it was with community and people, and I love it, and it pushes all of my buttons. So part of 30 Days of Hustle isn't going, hey, here's how I do things, you should do it. Like, the challenge of online classes right now is there's one, a lot of snake oil salesmen where they've done something well for 10 minutes and then are selling you a class about it and promising something that's not going to happen, whether it's an amount of money. Like, you should never tell somebody without knowing who they are, knowing where they live, knowing what they're capable of, if you do this, this will happen. No,
preach.
Maybe I live in the middle of nowhere and I'm a terrible writer, and you shouldn't tell me, you'll show me how to have a bestseller.
Yeah.
Like, that's so fake. So what the class is more about is going, okay, well, who are you really? What are you good at? What are the things that work for you? Because maybe you're community driven and this will be a great, you know, the exercise program needs to be that. Or maybe you're more, you know, you feel better when you're more introverted. So this is an approach that works for you. And so a big part of it is figuring out, okay, what are your strengths? What are you all about? And then mapping that to actually doing things and going, you know, you keep saying that you want to get up early, but you keep bringing your phone to bed and binge watching Netflix. Like, those are competing things.
Yeah.
And it'd be great if it was complicated, but it's not. Leave your phone in the kitchen. And that's, I have to do that. Like, and I wish I was more disciplined than needing to do that, but I've identified I suck at Netflix. And so I'm going to have to leave my phone
in
the kitchen.
Maybe you excel at Netflix and it's the wrong thing to excel at.
Maybe I should,
I mean, maybe you're pursuing the wrong thing. Maybe your gift is binge watching and you should just make a goal out of that.
Yeah, that's what people always say that back to me. They go, what if my goal is to binge watch? And what's crazy to me, like, and I love this idea, is that in the 90s, binge was a dirty word, and now it's a marketing term. So you go to Barnes & Noble, binge-worthy TV is a category.
Yeah.
And, like, that's changed in our culture. And so people go, it's weird, I have a hard time with leadership or getting stuff done or efficiency. And you go, no, it's not. Like, there's whole industries geared at making sure you don't.
Right.
And they're really efficient. Good, and they spend billions of dollars in research.
And more, it's less about hours, it's about outcomes and whatever it is, whatever section, whatever industry that you're doing. And, I mean, you know, it really is the hustle factor, I think, is the make or break point for so many people.
But that,
because it's like information is no longer.
There's no shortage.
There's no shortage of information. So anybody can get the same information that you can get. You just have to work harder.
Yeah.
Good things may come to those who wait, but only what's left behind by those who hustle. And the big, big thing is being willing to discipline yourself and surround yourself with those people that are going to get you to where you need to go.
Well, the other thing is, hustle has a terrible reputation on the internet because so many people on Instagram use it over photos of Lamborghinis or yachts or their watches, and are like, every day I'm hustling, Abraham Lincoln. You're like, pretty sure that was Rick Ross, but fine, Abraham Lincoln. But so for me, though, like, hustle's an act of focus, not frenzy. So a lot of times when people hear hustle, they think, oh, become a workaholic. But my life ending in divorce and isn't a success. Me working, like, there's a term for people who work 24/7, it's addicts. Like, they're using work and hustle as a drug. And so for me, rest is a huge part of hustle.
Yeah, you had the term aholic at the end of what they're doing, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah, it's not a benefit. And so I think a big part of it is going, well, why am I doing it? And what do I get out of this? You know, I think that's a really powerful question to ask about, okay, I'm doing this one thing. Well, why are you doing it? And it can be little things. I asked somebody the other day, how do I get more people on my email list? And she's this business coach. And she said, well, the first question is, why do you want them on your email list? And I was like, that's not what you're supposed to say. You're just supposed to build a platform. Ah, get people in your platform. And, you know, you asked who I'm learning from. I've got a business coach I work with. And then I've also got kind of like a business guru that I talk to about once a month to go, here's what I'm working on. And
they poke holes in your ideas.
The first time I talked to one of the business coaches, she said, I've studied everything you've done, and you are what I call accidentally successful. And I was like, well, please, what does that mean? And she said,
my head just shrank significantly.
And she was right. She was right. So I can, if I'm not careful, I can get by on charisma. I can get by on humor. I can get by on things that don't lay a foundation, and discipline lays a foundation. And so it's not sexy. It's not always fun. But as far as like a long-term serving my family, serving the community of people I'm trying to help, it matters.
And so for listeners who that sounds intriguing to, and it really ought to sound intriguing to you, you can go to 30daysofhustle.com. The next round of that begins in September. So you have this summer to binge watch and be lazy and be completely undisciplined.
Eat that cheese.
That's right.
Don't move it. Eat it.
Chow down. And then September, you will get on this train and become whatever it is you're supposed to become, because we're not making false promises to you.
30daysofhustle.com.
That's right, 30, so not spelling out.
Nobody has time for that.
I mean, we talked about emphasis, and for some people, you know, their obstacle is their emphasis, but what obstacles are you currently facing right now, either in your organization or personally?
I would say a big obstacle is figuring out the difference between more and enough. The people that I know that are the happiest aren't the wealthiest. That's not to say you can't be wealthy and be happy, but there's a big temptation for me personally, because a lot of people come up to me and go, you're leaving money on the table, your platform could be bigger, and it's really easy for me to get manic about that and think I have to scale. I got to scale versus going, what does enough look like in my life? So the other day I met with my business coach and we went over the next two quarters down in Dallas of the year. And I realized I had 6 weeks of vacation from now until the end of the year. And I told my wife, I was like, that feels like a lot, like too much vacation. And she was like, what are we doing this for? Like, what's the goal? Like, you don't want to spend time with your family? Like, you don't like, and she was right. But as somebody who sometimes slips into seeing what I do as my identity, that's a huge temptation. That's a huge obstacle. And so I'm really trying to live as a leader out of the idea that what if I woke up in the morning and nothing I did that day would change my identity? Like, what if I woke up in the morning, my identity was already set? Because we've both seen leaders who struggle with thinking that when they build their church, their team, their corporation, it's their identity. And that's just the worst.
How have you... I mean, you mentioned you started a business, so you're in the baby steps there in terms of leading a team. And I mean, what are some of the practical ways you've taken to keep this from becoming an identity? And that's a noble goal, but it's, I mean, I imagine that's also a day-to-day discipline going back to that thing.
Oh yeah.
As well.
I wish I could like do that on January 1st and be like, well, that was good.
I know. Check that box.
Check that box. I crushed that identity one.
Boom.
No, I guess for me, it's having people in my life that can ask me about it. Is one thing that can say, hey, that thing you did seemed outside of what you told me you were going to do. I had a friend who was going to pastor a huge church, and he talked to one of the country's most successful pastors and said, like, how do I not get weird? Like, how do I not get lost in it? And he said, well, you make a list of the things that make you weird. You go through and you make a list, and here's 15 that make you weird. And he said, having your own parking place makes you weird. You know, these things make you weird. And he said, and you ask three friends to tell you if they see you doing those. But my friend recognized that's a really hard thing to ask somebody. So instead, he wrote himself a letter about those 15 things and gave the letter to three people and said, hey, if you ever see me doing any of these 15 things, please hand me this letter.
Please punch me in my head with my own words.
Yeah. And so I think it's really important to have people like that. But as far as like practical stuff that I do, it's limiting the amount of time I work because I like what I do. That's the challenge of leadership. Like it's fun. Like you won't become a workaholic at a job you hate. You try to do a job you hate less. Like you become a workaholic at a job you enjoy and it
has some payoff.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to be deliberate about my hours, especially during the summer. I'm trying to be deliberate about saying yes to things that are the right things, not the ones that are just ego things. So if somebody goes, hey, here's this thing you could do, and it's real, and then I have to try to Kevin Bacon explain it to my wife, like, here's how it's kind of sort of related 6 degrees to this, and she'll go, oh, that's just an ego play. And I'll go, no, I could see. So I think those are, you know, and I only have two people on my team. I have an assistant, and then I have like a social media guy. And so I think being connected to both of them and being clear about here's the goals we're working on. And when we get out of that, we need to, you know, and some of it, like one of our principles is we want to be the L.L. Bean of online courses. So L.L. Bean, their whole thing is your shirt is your receipt. So great customer service. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to go, okay, how do I make the refund policy like really easy?
It's like Craftsman tools, the lifetime replacement.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, learning from other brands or businesses that I respect and go, wow, they're really good at that. How do I make sure that I never fight somebody on the refund? You know, because And then also trying to keep in mind like a person. It's hard to lead a massive group of people. It's easy to think about a person. And so I remember I had coffee with a guy named Jeremy, and he said, I love your book. My wife and I have $50 of income we get to spend on stuff that's fun every month, and we listen to it on audio. And so I remember that guy. So whenever I get that temptation to go like, people will pay $10 million for your online course, I think, I don't need Jeremy's $10 million. Like, I need to, you know, like,
it has value. And to make it available to Jeremy.
Yeah. It has value. I want to charge a fair price for it, but I try to keep Jeremy in mind.
You have talked a couple different times about your wife and how she speaks into your life.
No, I want her to be my executive coach.
No, she should be on the podcast.
She should.
She sounds amazing.
She gets asked to do speaking engagements, and she's like, never.
She
like,
doesn't enjoy speaking. Not
no,
her thing.
No.
Really? And then mentioned parenting briefly earlier. So the next question is a bit of a turn from the organization, the thought leadership piece, and it's just simply, what does leadership in your home look like?
Well, I think part of it is not, this is kind of weird, but I think it's part of it's not handing your kids your brokenness or your neuroses. Yeah. This like the other day, there's this song by this guy, Mike Posner, and it's a brilliant song that details the challenge of fame. He blew up like 5 or 6 years ago with this song that he wrote when he was a student at Duke and just got really popular. And then was really challenging. So his new song, it's really catchy, but it's really honest. And he says essentially,
Can you sing it for us?
It's kind of like rappish. So, but he says, I get along with
all the more reason.
Yeah,
let's go.
All the better. Yeah. He says, I get along with old timers because my name's a reminder of a song they always forgot. And he goes, I already blew my shot. And so I was telling my kids about it, but I told them in a way that made it sound like success is bad. And I heard my daughter explain it to a friend one day, and she said, oh, this song is about how success wrecked this guy. And I thought, oh, no, that wasn't like, because one of my things that I struggle with as a human is that success is bad and you should be ashamed of success and it's something you shouldn't, you know, like it's only going to end poorly.
That's a distinctly evangelical idea.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a pastor's kid.
Amen.
Like
all three of us are.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a little support
and
group.
And so hearing her, so I think part of parenting is going, oh, wait, oh, no, like the things I'm saying that I don't even think they're picking up, they're picking up. So part of it is not trying to pass down that to them. For me, being honest about being with them and being present when I'm with them and being deliberate about finding things to do together with them. Like, so we're doing a summer reading challenge this summer. And so it's based on pages. And so my oldest daughter has a running list of who's read the most pages. And so they're every day.
Is this age adjusted or do they, you know, so like
no,
you need to read harder books or do you get to go read like Pop?
Boxcar Children.
Yeah.
No. Is it Boxcar Children?
Yeah, there's Boxcar Children. Yeah, my daughter's
right. Babysitter Club. Yep. It's like, oh, what do you know? Babysitter Club. No. So we're like trying to be deliberate about staying connected and enjoying that time and being present. But parenting is challenging. Like it's super challenging. And also, like, parenting is being careful about social media. Like, I'm kind of a stick in the mud on that stuff. So, like, our daughter's 12, and she would probably love Instagram. But guess what? The legal age limit of Instagram is 13.
Yeah,
so
they
don't care about your kid. Like, if Instagram is the one going, hey, just be careful. There's a lot of porn on here. And you're like, I got an Instagram, I believe. Like, if you go to, there was an app.
Instagram cared, they would keep the porn off, and they don't. Yeah. So they don't care.
But there was a music app that my daughter wanted, and it was like, you make funny videos. And I read their disclaimer, like their like FAQ disclaimers. They're like, hey, look, it's for 18-year-olds or up. And they said, but if you're 13 and you have parental approval, da, da, da. And then it said, but remember, 18 and up. Like they said multiple times, don't let a kid use this. They said it's user-generated content, and we're not controlling that. And so I think social media is a big part of that, of being deliberate about that and engaged. The challenge is, I remember I had a 15-year-old. I spoke about this, and he came up, and he was like, man, I wish my parents had talked to me about this or had heard this speech because then maybe I wouldn't be stuck. And he wasn't talking about being stuck on online gambling. Like, I've yet to meet a teenager who's like, dude, these slot machines, like, this roulette is killing me. But he said, my parents said, as long as you pay for it yourself, you can have a phone. And a lot of parents make the mistake where they tie grades or earning it to understanding how to have a phone. And it'd be like if you
time
said,
to trust.
If parents said, hey, as long as you can pay for Playboy, you can get a subscription. Like, it's insane. Like, your kid's ability to get an A in math has nothing to do with the fire hose that is the internet. And so, like, that's one issue that I think as parents, I always tell people we're the first generation that's ever had to deal with it. And so it's really challenging.
Mm-hmm. It's so pervasive. I mean, my older daughter is 10 and she's already asking for a phone. I mean, and she's been asking for a phone for like a year or two. Very small number of people in her class have them at her age. But within the next 2 years, she would be in the minority if she doesn't. And so then it becomes the, if I get you a phone, what are you not allowed to put on it?
Yeah.
And
what can't you do?
You know, well, yeah, I retain all rights to check your phone at any moment of every day.
I don't want to
invade their privacy.
That's like if you came home one day and your kid had installed a lock on their bedroom door, you'd be like, oh, that's weird. I don't remember a deadbolt on the door. And you're like, well, Dad, I'm 13 now, so it's time for me
my
to
life
have some
is
privacy.
My own. That's right. Yeah, that's no. Your kids are not smart enough to make those decisions.
No, not at all. I mean, I'm so grateful that I was not a teenager during that time.
I know.
I cannot imagine.
Or that you didn't have to date with online dating. Like, dude, what a gift that was, too.
It's
so
just,
complicated.
Everything.
It's just,
the internet just is so a great blessing messy. In a lot of ways, but this is a hot mess.
It is. Yeah. It is, truly. All right. Speaking of which.
Hot messes.
Hot
that's
messes.
Right. That's right.
Speaking of hot messes. I know for me, I was a hot mess at 20. So what would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
I would say be led, like go be led. I think as a 20-year-old, I thought I knew everything. I think I had a huge chip on my shoulder. I don't think I was curious about the right things. So I think I'd say listen more and go, you know, surround yourself with people that are smarter than you. And then I'd say, and there's a lot of them. I think that's what I'd say. And then I'd say get to really know people. It's hard. It's impossible to lead somebody without really knowing them. And knowing what they're all about and what they care about. I think I'd do that. I think I'd say go find, and I kind of go against the mentor model in the sense of it puts a lot of pressure to find like one perfect person that's going to lead you until you die. I'm a much bigger believer in going, wow, this guy or this woman, whatever, like if you're a woman, this woman has the type of marriage I'd like to have someday. I'm going to ask her some questions.
Is that what you mean by being curious about the right things? Just noticing something and asking questions of the person who has that. So marriage or,
exactly.
or character, or business success or whatever.
Well, and
it
just
is.
Like feeding yourself the right things, you know? So I think I would say that, but I learn via relationship more than I learn any other way. And so I know that now as a 40-year-old, but it's taken me an awful long time. And then I think I tell the 20-year-old to be patient. I think that we, you know, there's this weird thing where we think 20-year-olds are going to have it figured out. Like even picking a major, like the idea that an 18-year-old is going to pick what they do for the next 40 years is ludicrous.
What was your major?
My major was journalism, which was a great, major. But I told my sister, who's 15 years younger, you know, half of what I do is social media. I couldn't have majored in that because it didn't exist. Like it physically didn't exist. So if you're 20 right now listening to this, what you do might not exist. And any 40-year-old, like that's the thing I don't like is when like guys my age say to a 20-year-old, what's the plan? As if I had one at 20. Like no honest 45-year-old.
I think it's got to be what's the mindset?
Yeah.
It's a major in asking good questions.
What
major
was
in curious. I was a theology major.
You're still doing that. I mean, we're in Lifeway.
Yeah, I mean, it has been
a lot of theology all over the place.
It has been really beneficial because I was in Christian publishing for several years and you know, working in church ministry resourcing now, but my job is marketing. Yeah. My job is social media. There's not a lot of, you know, Old Testament criticism in a good Instagram post.
Yeah.
So
not a fun one. one that people are going to like.
That's right. Well, at least not.
Well, depending on certain circles.
No, I'm telling you, you know, Walter Brueggemann doesn't play well on Instagram.
Yeah,
I'm just going to throw that out there.
What was your major?
Philosophy and rhetoric, philosophy and speech. And so
that he actually uses that every day.
I do. Because
persuasion and rambling endlessly.
It is true.
And asking questions about everything and never settling on an answer.
People get bothered at how many questions you ask?
It's not the questions, it's the lack of settling on an answer. That's the philosophy major in him.
No, I...
See, you didn't want to settle on that answer.
No. I don't want to settle on that
answer. He said no, philosophy major.
There's a... It just depends on what it is. Yeah. He knows very well that there are things that I'm dead set on. I've decided, I've counted to three, and there will be no...
there'll be no changing. Budging. That's right.
But there are some things that's like, okay, well, let's see how this goes along. The crazy thing is, prior to, I was, you know, executive pastor, and it was strategic initiatives and some staff development pieces and different things like that. So I'm also, I love process. Like if I wrote a book, it would it wouldn't be purpose-driven church. It would be process-driven church.
I'm terrible at that.
And so I love doing that, but I only want to touch it once. I want to fix it, or I either want to start it or I want to fix something and like make it hum and then move on. So I can be decisive in that way, but yeah, the entrepreneur that I never knew I really had really came out when I came to Lifeway. I'm an ENTP. Myers-Briggs.
Are you big on Myers-Briggs?
Yeah, I'm ENFP.
What's the difference?
I like the Enneagram too. Like, there's a lot of good ones.
There are a lot of good ones now.
Although Enneagram, like when you're a Christian, you have to be like, isn't that the devil? It sounds like pentagram.
Enneagram.
That's one that
it's one about your belly button, right? And they read.
Yeah.
Read
you're what, an outie or an innie.
Yeah. And based on your personality of what that looks like.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. That is right up there with StrengthsFinder then.
It
the
is.
Legitimacy.
Totally.
Yeah. Perfect. I did want to, you know, you were talking about, we were talking about mindset before we got off on Todd's philosophical bent. I feel like that's something that is equally as pertinent. We asked this question about what would you tell your 20-year-old self, and I feel like it's a...
You ever get dishonest answers?
I'm sure we've got a few.
No, but have you ever had somebody, and you don't have to say who they were, but have you ever had somebody on the podcast where you're like, this guy or girl or woman or man is like totally just performing right now and not telling us true things? Or do you weed that out by the guests you invite?
We try to invite guests who we trust and respect on the front end.
That's good.
So that's you're not the exception. So congratulations. Yeah.
There are people that you're like, I'm not sure if you're self-aware.
Right. Yeah.
So you may think that, but if you ask the people that work with you, they probably would
say
something.
I want to do a leadership
different.
Event where they have the spouses come on stage and they ask what
hilarious.
That's like. Like that to me would be, because there's I've always said, like, if you lead on stage but not at home, you're an actor, not a leader.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's always dangerous.
Yeah. The question is, would the spouses speak honestly? Or
no, they couldn't. Of course they couldn't. No. Because it's like,
I'm going to air my marital strife.
You know,
right?
The best place. Well, yeah, Jenny would, but we talk that way already.
Right.
So nobody'd be like, what? But you're right. Like if somebody said, hey, you can go to counseling or just do this event with 300 strangers, they wouldn't be like, let's do the event.
That's right. I'm trashing him in public.
That'll
let's
end
go.
Well.
It sounds awesome.
It wouldn't be trashing. It would just be bluntly honest.
Yes. What I was going to say is just, I feel like this question is a sneaky way to give advice to people who are 30 and 40 and 50. Because it's
totally.
What would you tell your 20-year-old self is a lot less pretentious than what advice do you have for the listener? And the listener is more likely to receive it because they're going to go, oh, yeah, 20. I was that way too. But every time I hear the answer to these questions, I go, shoot, I got to work on that right now.
Yeah.
No
joke. I'm not 20.
And I'm shocked at how many people seem to at least process it in the moment. Like they are processing in the moment. Like they haven't, it's like they haven't thought about it before. And so
they don't live with a lot of regret, apparently.
That must be nice.
I know.
What's that like?
I mean, part of it may be, what can I say on, you know, publicly? And part of it is just, you know, watching them chew on it or process it.
I mean,
especially
we've had a couple
processors.
People who are real honest. They were like, I would tell myself, stop doing cocaine.
Yeah.
And things like that. I mean, that's a good thing to tell your 20-year-old self.
Yeah.
If that was an issue.
I bet nobody's like, I would tell them to start doing cocaine. That's probably never been an answer.
Not on this podcast.
No.
That's
like a DJ podcast?
That sounds like something maybe on like The Nerdist or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Electronic music.
That's right.
I'm just saying
things. Todd's favorite.
Really?
It is. Well, I have a very eclectic.
I love electronic music.
Oh, we should talk.
Well, you guys can talk afterwards.
It's great. It's so
really
great
is.
To write to.
It's
no words.
No
I
words.
I like ambient,
see,
trance, all that.
What happened to me was the type of music I grew up listening to and loved and even, you know, into the pastorate, I'm like, this is not healthy. This is not good. I should not be listening to this type of music.
Because you loved hip hop, didn't you? You love 90s hip hop.
I love 90s hip hop and rap.
Yes. Yeah.
And really like bad rap, like gangster rap. Which is weird because I'm from a town. There's only one stoplight in the county.
Public Enemy. I love the Public Enemy. I was like, these guys get me. So, yeah, I was the target audience.
So what happened to me was I was like, I still like the beat, the music, the whatever, it's just evocative and
the feel of it.
Well, here's my thing. Like when I jog, I can run the first half to like a sermon. Like there's sermons I'll listen to. You can't finish hard
on
a
sermon. How long do you run? A sermon is a lot longer than I usually run, unless it's like the 12-minute sermonette or something.
No, it's like a 45-minute and it's a 30-minute sermon, like you can't finish a race on a sermon. Like you have to go harder than that. You can't like even, no offense to any Christian musician, like if it's a worship song, like I can't crush it to Oceans. Like it's too soft. It's not going to push me across the line.
Neither can most worship teams or church congregations, but fair. That's an opinion for a different day.
Wow. You should do a music issue.
We might.
There's no way you could fit all the members of Hillsong United
in
this room.
I know a pastor who's a DJ who does some EDM stuff.
I bet they're out. Is he pastor in Vegas?
No, he's like somewhere up in Minneapolis or something.
Really?
It's crazy Minnesotans.
You gotta watch those guys.
All right. Well,
did you ask your question? I guess that was the question.
That was the question.
How are we doing on time?
No, we're good. We are spot on, but I do think it's a good time to sign off.
You guys ready to keep going, man.
You guys can compare playlists and Todd.
I feel like
Todd
we helped
run.
People.
No.
We did.
Like, we've sold some EDM.
I still like Moby. Like, I think I'm like, I don't know if a lot of people do, but
this is turning into a Moby confessional hour.
No way. This is turning into an awesome hour. If you haven't listened to Moby while you write. Yeah. I went to Yanni recently. And he's really not EDM. He's more just pure awesome. Like a Yanni concert.
Is that a genre, pure awesome?
And Yanni's the only one in it. Like Live at the Acropolis. Right.
What
if
about
you have
Enya?
Not really my thing, but Yanni.
I'm just with you at this point.
I'm not making any of that up either. Yanni was awesome.
Yanni. You can go to acuff.me to find out how it was that John came to love Yanni. It's tucked away deep
in
the recesses
ears and a
of
heart,
the site.
To quote Alec Baldwin.
You can also go to acuff.me to find out about his speaking gigs. You can read his blog there. You can find all of his books there. And then you can also find the 30-day, is it Hustle
it's
Challenge?
30days of hustle.com.
Okay, 30daysofhustle.com. And so go check that out. He actually doesn't have any Yanni music on there, and I should probably say that
I could afford the rights, you better believe I would.
Well—
I wish I had a shirt on right now. I have a shirt.
You better start hustling.
Like looking over the crowd with his arms spread. I just had to describe it.
That was
like radio.
It was a bit like what is it? Christ the Redeemer over Rio.
Imagine like, yeah, exactly. Like majestic.
Yeah. Yanni, absolutely. Christ the Redeemer over Rio. Real similar.
He doesn't really write music so much as capture the wind.
And on that delicious note, we will sign off. Thanks so much for listening and tune in next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. As you go, don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our upcoming Pipeline Conference. It will be on October 13th in Nashville, Tennessee, and early bird pricing runs through July, so move quickly to register. Again, that website is myleadershippipeline.com. We look forward to seeing you there.